Blog Talk Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Good afternoon, or still good morning, listeners. This is Bob Deal. You are live on the air with the Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio Show. But before we begin, I'd like to bring on my guest co-host for this afternoon. I would like to bring on my friend and brother in the martial arts, Kimo Kiyoke. Kimo, how are you this afternoon?
Good morning, Bob. Good morning, listeners. Afternoon on the East Coast, I suppose. I'm good, and it's a pleasure to be back.
Oh, bud, it's a pleasure to have you back. We're going to start real briefly. A couple of announcements before we go on to the show. It's with a heavy heart that I have to announce the passing of Pendekar Paul Dutoir. He is an absolute legend in the martial arts, and it is a sad loss to the Sealot community. My condolences go out to his family, his brother Victor, all of his students, Louis Campos, which is a friend of mine that has been a longtime student. And I just like to send out heartfelt condolences to everybody out there. Now, Sifu Reseda is up for Best Martial Arts School in the Western Seattle area. Now, at first, she didn't think, nice opportunities. She was grateful. She was honored. But there's 140 schools on tap for this award or for this honor to be number one in Western Seattle. She didn't think much of it until one of the schools had made a comment and said, I'm not going to be beat out by some chick. Well, that sort of set her feathers flying. Yeah, I know, right? And right now she is second. With 60 plus votes. The website is a little bit, we're digging for votes now. We're asking all of our listeners, all of our brothers and sisters, vote for Sifu Reseda for this honor to become top dog in the Western Seattle area. So what you need to do is you can check out the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page, my Facebook page, Reseda's Facebook page. I'll tell you, it's nominated for King TV, KINGG TV 5, Best of Western Seattle, and she's in the martial arts category. Go to one of our Facebook pages, click on the link, and please vote for Sifu Rusty. She's a good person. She really deserves it. And for that, I am going to turn the mic over to my friend Kimo. Kimo, what have you got?
Well, we have a couple birthdays, Bob. We have the first one, which is today, the lovely and talented Caitlin Rose Young. 9/15, September 15th, today is her birthday. And this Wednesday, we have a friend of yours, Mr. Riley Conroy, on September 18th, which is this coming Wednesday. So those are the
beautiful.
Two birthdays.
We have something for those guys. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to step on you.
No. What do you have for them?
I have this.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to Kate.
You like that? That was great. It was absolutely wonderful. Let's see. For those people, I'd like to wish a happy birthday to Caitlin and Riley. And if we miss you, we apologize. Happy birthday to you. And now it is time for Kimo's Health News.
Yes, indeed. Okay, so today's subject is Get a Better Brain in 20 Minutes. If you're looking for an all-natural way to improve your memory and maintain your mental focus, Researchers at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign may have the answer. They found that in less than half an hour, you can boost your working memory and mental control. In this study, the scientists found that a single 20-minute session of Hatha yoga produced significant brain benefits. Yoga is an ancient Indian science and way of life that includes not only physical movements and postures, but also regulated breathing and meditation, says researcher Neha Goth. She says that the practice involves an active intentional or mindfulness component, but its potential benefits have not been thoroughly explored. The brain-boosting yoga session consisted of a 20-minute progression of
Timo, are you still on? Uh-oh. Timo, did we lose you? Timo. It looks like we may have lost Timo, everybody, and I really apologize.
We're better able to focus their mental resources, process information quickly, more accurately, and also learn, hold, and update pieces of information more effectively than after performing an aerobic exercise bout. Goh says, the breathing and meditative exercises aim at calming the mind and body and keeping distracting thoughts away while you focus on your body, posture, or breath. Maybe these processes translate beyond yoga practice when you try to perform mental tasks or day-to-day activities. Very interesting.
That is very, very interesting. And that was Kimo with his health news. And now it's time for
Weird News.
Well, this is a little strange. Hee Jung Chae, an Alaskan cab driver, pepper sprayed a passenger. In Anchorage, Alaska, an Alaskan cab driver has been charged with pepper spraying a passenger and firing at least one shot in the ground during a dispute over an $11 fare. Anchorage police say 63-year-old Hee Jung Chae was charged Saturday with felony assault and weapons misconduct. Police spokeswoman Danny Myron tells the Anchorage Daily News that 50-year-old passenger Eric Stoneback rode with the driver, but was carrying only $5 for an $11 fare. Myron says Stoneback offered to get the rest of the money from his apartment, but Myron says the driver locked Stoneback in the cab and at some point pepper sprayed him. Myron says the passenger kicked out the cab's passenger window and Chai pulled out a gun and fired it once or twice. Chai was arrested, then released Saturday on $2,500 bail. Over on $11 fare.
Chai needs to do some yoga and focus on his anger. Jeez.
Over $11. This is amazing. Now we're gonna go right
you
into
only
weird
have
love.
$5.
Now if any oh go.
You pay $11.
$5, me lovey.
God.
And wouldn't let him go into his apartment or anything. It was nuts.
Well, when you're in Alaska, you should have the appropriate fare, especially if you have Hee Jung Chae as your cab driver, clearly. Jeez. See, Bob, I am from Anchorage, Alaska, and it is such a mellow town. It is not New York. The cab drivers aren't itch because they're always getting robbed. They have to watch out for snow and probably moose. You know, they wanted a city, they're 8 feet tall, but I don't think there's an epidemic of people being low on fare where you have to carry pepper spray and a gun. That's a bit extreme.
That is very extreme. And you're right. He's not in New York. He doesn't have to worry about, you know, big crime waves. But he carried a gun and pepper spray.
Wow. Post-traumatic stress disorder?
He was
going to
take care of it. Huh?
Post-traumatic stress disorder, you think?
I think it must be. Well, the name indicates he's not from there. I would say he's not a. It doesn't sound like he's an Alaskan native.
No, it's true.
Of course, neither does Kiyoki.
That's a stage name, but you're right.
That I didn't know. I've only known you for 25 years. That I didn't know.
Right. Yeah, it's true. So we're gonna go on to Denmark.
Yeah, we're going to Denmark. If anybody listened last week, I've run out of states to do weird laws on in the United States, so we have to go outside the country now. So in Denmark, attempt to escape from a prison is not illegal. However, if one is caught, he is required to serve out the remainder of his term. So there is no consequence for a prisoner to escape a Denmark prison. One may not be charged for food at an inn unless that person, by his or her own opinion, is full.
Wow.
Restaurants may not charge for water unless it is accompanied by another item, such as ice or a lemon slice. No one may start a car while someone is underneath the vehicle. Before starting your car, you are required to check lights, brakes, steering, and honk the horn, just like a DMV test. Headlights must be on whenever the vehicle is being operated in order to distinguish it from parked cars. That's actually a good safety thing, not just in a tunnel like over here. When driving, you must have someone in front of your car with a flag to warn horse-drawn carriages that a motor car is coming. If a horse-drawn motor carriage is trying to pass a car and the horse becomes uneasy, the owner of the car is required to pull over and, if necessary, cover the car. It is illegal to encrypt data files, own and distribute them. There is a penalty of 20 kr for not reporting when a person has died. I'm not familiar. That must be their money exchange, the kr.
Right. Hey, Bob, what happened? You think they had a problem with people starting the car with other persons underneath the car to make that a law?
You know, they must have. And what was that person doing under your car unless he was a mechanic?
It had to be more than one person to make this law pass.
That's right. And like Rusty and I have said in the past, they must have had a problem to make this a law. They had to.
Hey, Bob, when we go to Denmark, I will volunteer to sit on the – I'll be your hood ornament. I'll be in front of your car on the hood waving a flag to warn horse-drawn carriages. That sounds like fun.
It does, doesn't it? Now, I didn't, you know, I've never been to Denmark. I did not know they still had horse-drawn carriages, but that must be a big thing.
There must be a huge Amish community there.
Must be. Cool.
I could go there.
Well,
they're never going to hear it.
You know, yeah, exactly. So could I, you know. I just, you know, my son wants to go to wherever it is that the... that they have free weed, I guess, in like Switzerland or one of those places that sort of distributes and pot's totally legal. No dispensaries, no nothing. It's totally legal over there.
Oh, and then if you have that, if that's your thing, you can go to a restaurant and not pay for it unless you say you're full.
That's right. Now, in my eyes, though, of course, that's fraud. If you're, like, buzzing out the seams, you say, I'm not full. I don't have to pay you. You know, that's something else. But these are funky, funky laws. Next week, I'm really excited because next week our guest is going. I mean, I'm excited about William Christopher Ford, which you know, but I'm excited about next week because our guest is going to be famed martial artist and stuntman Richard Norton. And I'm going to specifically do Weird Laws on Australia. Yeah. Now, I thought he still lived over here. Last time I saw him, he lived in L.A. somewhere. Now he lives in Melbourne. So the trick is that we're going to have to do a Skype-to-Skype call to get him on the show. Now, you and I are having a time delay right now of about 3 seconds. When you do Skype-to-Skype, it's a five-second delay. Five-second delay on a radio show is an eternity.
Does present a challenge.
It does. Rusty's done it before, but I'm looking forward to it. He's a great guy. You know, last week I was at the Honor Society Awards at the Burbank Hall of the Inn for the Martial Arts History Museum, and it was great. I ran into a couple people I hadn't seen in a long time, beautiful people. Which I used to judge for at the March Madness tournament. I saw Peter Sugarfoot Cunningham.
Wow.
A couple other people I hadn't seen in a long time. And they both, now I hadn't heard back from them, but they both agreed to do the show. That could have been a spur of the moment. I've got them on the spot and they just said, sure, email me on Facebook. But I've got Peter's number. I'm going to call him. And those will be two great people to get on the show. One guy said it was really funny. One guy last week said Peter Sugarfoot Cunningham. That's cute. What's the other one called? And I started laughing at that.
You know, Richard Norton is in incredible shape for his age, and I mean that with all respect. That guy is just phenomenal. You know?
Oh yeah, that's one of my opening jokes next week. Since he's not listening, it's going to be, he's one of the only martial artists who's ever looked down his nose at me. Of course, that's because he's 6'3 and I'm only 5'8.
Okay, you're preaching to the choir here, Bob.
You're the only one I can actually do short jokes on other than Restina. Now, Restina's in this seminar yesterday. She's complaining about her legs because she's in horse stands for probably an hour and a half. And she told me, she says, if anybody ever told me again that Tai Chi is easy, she's going to kick him in the teeth. And when she said her legs are sore, I said, good thing they're so close to the ground. Because she's your height. So she's
pretty
short.
Cool. Yeah.
Great person. Still waiting for it. We're actually ahead of schedule. Hopefully, we can draw this out and we get callers called in about 11:30. What do you think about bringing him on a little early, Kimo?
Oh, that'd be great. You know, he's a great guy. I'm sure he has some stories to tell. I'd like to hear what he has to. Well, we'll get there when he comes on. But
let me go to break, and we'll be. I'm sorry. What?
Since we have a little bit of time, how did Mark Makita go? I couldn't catch that.
Went very well. We had one of his students call in that was, I believe, out of the 949 or 951 area code. He's got some insight I've never heard before. Great insight on you know, teaching his students about how to deal with stress under a combat situation. He has some really good ideas and some good thoughts. He's a really fantastic teacher. Last time I saw him was a Guru Ted seminar, probably in, oh my God, you know, Guru Ted's been gone since 98. So that means it's probably been about 95 since I've seen Guru Mark.
Yeah, rest in peace. Wow.
Absolutely.
But so
Guru Mark.
Yeah, I've been to his school.
You know, we've lost some good people over the years. Which one were you at? The one on Washington?
The one off of, was that Sepulveda?
somewhere in the West Side, and he hosted a Grandmaster Attilio seminar there, and it was a great session. But yeah, Mark is so talented. That's really cool.
He's been through some political stuff. It's been insane over the years. He is a fantastic, a talented guy. He said he was a great martial artist. You know, I was discussing with the theater that we've lost some really good people, you know, and we announced the passing. You know, we started this show last year at Chemo on November 11th of 2012, and our first guest to kick off the show. Now, I had actually approached K-Mac to be our first guest. But when you deal with a celebrity, even though he hasn't done anything or he's not out there, it has to go to the publicist. And you know the deal. You're in the industry. And it's actually really ridiculous for a show. And I think he got a little bit bent out of shape. His publicist contacted me, said, when's the show? And I said, you know what? You guys took too long to get a hold of me. I had to fill it with somebody else. So to go back into my point, I guess, our very first guest was Lindsay Largusa, Ben Largusa's son. And
wow.
Our show was on Sunday. Lindsay, one of his discussions, man, was the young Filipinos going way too early. After our show, Lindsay was gone 4 days later.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. You know how many people at that point said, I am never doing your show.
Oh, wow. I don't know, because a lot of people would blame it on Filipino food, but then there are so many Filipinos that are in their hundreds, you know, in their 90s and 100 years old, and, you know, of course, a lot of this may be genetics, but it's very strange that so many of our masters, Ted Lukai-Lukai, Edgar Salite, you know, I mean, goes on and on. These people weren't even in their 50s.
Right,
shocking.
Right. You know, Ted was like 45. I even think Edgar was younger than that because he had a really young baby when he died. His baby was only maybe a year old. But yeah, and you're right. I've known Filipinos, not masters per se, but, well, look at Dan Santo. He's in his 70s. Sifu Resina's mother. Now, Sifu Resina's Filipina. Her mother's like 73 and has come out triumphant against breast cancer and a lot of things that most people would have probably died from. God bless her. But, it's hard to say. Now, you're part Filipino, correct?
Oh, I'm full Filipino. Dad's from Ilocos, and my mom's from Bicol. So, yeah.
Okay.
Just a stage name.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. And now, how long have you had that stage name?
Since 1991, right before I met you and Mark, actually, Stuart. I changed my name because... in the past, I had a history of getting into trouble, so I didn't want to embarrass my family name. So since then, I've become accountable and matured and very proud of my family. I just didn't want to get them in trouble in case I went on my old patterns, you know? And
well, of course.
So
is Kimo your real name?
Nope. Kimo and Keoki are two Hawaiian names. Kimo means Jim or Tim, and Keoki is George. So it's nothing exotic or esoteric. It's just, I was auditioning a lot back in the day, especially as a dancer, and I thought the name would be more endearing to me as a character as opposed to Floyd. My real name is Floyd. My last name is Bigornia, but at auditions they were saying Floyd Bigornia, and they expect some Italian guy, and I'd pop up. So, Kimo Keoki, they're like, oh, you must be Kimo. And it just became a cartoon character all of a sudden, and I like it. It stuck, and now it's too late to change back. I have no intention of it, but it works. Part of the Hollywood machine, I guess, to
have a stage name and a professional name that you can separate yourself from.
Sure.
Personal life.
Now, you told me that you knew our guest from today, William Christopher Ford, from doing a shoot. Do you remember what set you were on when you met?
My friend was stunt coordinating a student film from a really talented director from China. So I just did a day spot, and that's when I had the pleasure of meeting Mr. Ford. And it was, I can't remember exactly. I just remember the stunts and the scene that I was in. And my friend William Leong, he's a great stunt guy. He sometimes doubles Jet Li, and he's worked forever. He has over 300 films on his IMDb. He coordinated it, and he's a great martial artist himself. And it was nice having people like William and both Williams, Christopher Ford, to work on a project like this. It just made everything so smooth.
And that's the thing about William Christopher Ford. He is a genuine guy, very, very nice guy. I saw him last night at the Honor Awards. And with that, now it is time. We have stalled long enough, and hopefully that Rusty will call in about an hour. Let's go to a very short break. Well, it's going to be a long break. It's 3 minutes, 3 seconds, and we will come back with William Christopher Ford.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends. In English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes
me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today.
The only thing I didn't learn today.
The only thing I didn't learn is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
This is Nnamdi Asamoah. I play football for the Philadelphia Eagles, but what I do off the field with United Way might be more important. I'm a volunteer tutor and mentor. Why? Because over a million kids a year drop out of school, and that's not okay. It takes 12 years to create a graduate, but it takes about the same time to create a dropout. And the difference between a child becoming one or the other could be me, or it could be you. Studies show that if we get to these kids earlier, their chances are better. And kids who read well by third grade are more likely to graduate. So join me in United Way. Suit up and take the pledge. Become a volunteer reader, tutor, or mentor. Because when a child succeeds, we all succeed. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge at unitedway.org. Brought to you by United Way, the Ad Council, and the National Football League.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And now, on with the show.
Welcome back, listeners, and please help me welcome. I've got, of course, my guest co-host, Kimo Kyogi, which I just found out is a fake stage name, which I've known Kimo since 1991, 1992. I just found out he's been lying to me all these years. So there, Kimo. Well, please help me welcome to the show, Sensei William Christopher Ward.
Hello.
Thank you,
Hello.
William, and welcome to the show. Good afternoon, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Well,
great to have you.
Good. It is fantastic to have you, sir. You know, we were talking a little bit when we were on break and prior to break because we were actually ahead of schedule. So Kimo started adding some stuff. I started adding some stuff. And here we are. So,
well, that's great,
as we start out, I'm sorry. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Oh, no, it just sounds like you guys are having a party over there. I feel like a little left out, you know.
We try to have fun.
Okay,
yes,
good.
Yes, you are. It must be my mic because I think you guys are coming in fine. I think I'm having a little three-second delay or so. By the time it gets through the computer, since you guys are on the phone, I think you guys are like a direct connect. William, as we start the show, tell our listeners about your background in the martial arts and about your school down in Torrance, please, sir.
Okay. Well, I started off training in karate in 1974 with a gentleman named Glenn Rabago, and he ran a school under Sensei Yamashita down in Torrance, and he eventually left for personal reasons, and his brother Richard Rabago took over the school, and most of my training actually came from him, and it was Okinawan Shorinryu. Along the way, I became highly influenced by the great Bruce Lee. I saw his movie for the first time and just lost my mind like everybody else did, and I just got on fire. And then from then on, I just wanted to continue training, and not only in studying karate, but also in looking at other arts as well. I wanted to quit for a long time, but my mom wouldn't let me, and I'm really glad that she made me keep going. And eventually I got to train with Master Yamashita himself, or Master Yamashita himself, great, great martial artist. I've been very lucky. Got a chance to train with some great people. Currently training with Japanese sword with Sensei Bruce Gwen in Fullerton, and in Arnista Mano with Mataguro Mark Lawrence. So, you know, it's just interesting stuff that I'm adding to my curriculum. My dojo is called Kaizen Dojo. It's in Torrance, and my wife and I established it 2 years ago. She's not a martial artist. She actually practices shiatsu massage, but what we wanted to do was somehow, at some point, someday, reconnect, I think, the healing arts and the martial arts, which, you know, at one time were really one thing. So we called it Kaizen Dojo, and Kaizen is the Japanese word for continual improvement. That is the foundation of our philosophy. We're always looking to improve ourselves, not only as instructors, but as people as well, and we hope that our students will be able to take that philosophy onward with their lives in whatever they do.
Wow. Congratulations on your dojo. That's 2 years in the making. That's terrific.
Thank you. We're doing okay. I mean, you know, there's a lot of great families, great kids, and, you know, we got some rascals in there, but, you know, that's part of my greatest teachers are my students, you know, and some of my greatest teachers are those little rascals that show up in my class, because I learn something new every time, you know, and it really forces you to become a better teacher, to come up with different ways to train people. You know, every kid is different. Every person's got a different personality, and some kids need nurturing, and some kids need tough love, and, you know, we need to kind of find a balance between those.
Well, speaking of that, it sounds like you teach all ages, not just kids. But
yes.
Do you have any special techniques that you use to teach children? I mean, a lot of them have really short attention spans and discipline issues, so.
Well, I certainly didn't invent this, but, you know, some of the, there's something called disguising the repetition, you know, where, you know, you probably need to do something about 10,000 times to master it, you know, and, you know, we have to find the different ways to do the same thing, but make it seem fresh. So I like to keep the kids moving. You know, we'll put it in a different context. We'll disguise the drill. We'll disguise the repetition within a fun drill, within a game. And, you know, they're by the end of the hour, they've done a lot. They just don't realize it, you know. And sometimes we get the kids who say, wow, is it over already? And that's a good sign, you know. If the kid, you always want to leave them wanting more. So that's just one of the techniques that we use. A lot of the good instructors know this, but especially with kids, you just got to keep your energy up. You got to be invested emotionally in what you're doing. You know, you certainly have to care about what you're doing, and I think you have to be sensitive to the short attention span of the kids. It tends to be a couple of minutes at the most. So once you sense that, then it's like, okay, let's change it up a little bit. And that might be as simple as just having them face the opposite direction or move to the other side of the class or something like that.
If I had children, by everything you just said, I would definitely put them in your school. You sound like you have a passion for the craft of being an educator, a teacher. A lot of fighters, a lot of martial artists, you know, they can just train themselves and be a better fighter. But teaching and training young minds and young artists, that's a gift and it's a craft, and you've just articulated that very well. So kudos to you for that.
Thank you. I know a lot of great martial artists, but not all of them are teachers by their own admission, you know. So I might not be the best martial artist out there or the best fighter, but I'm very good with kids, and I know what to do in order to, you know, get the results. And, you know, it's really for their self-improvement. I do appreciate that. It's been a process. It's been a journey for me, too, and I'm still learning. And, you know, I'm hoping to continue to become a better instructor. And as I said, you know, my students are, they really are my greatest teachers. So.
Well, you're doing the right thing. I mean, as one of our greatest authors of our day said, teach them well and let them lead the way.
Oh, indeed.
You know,
indeed.
It's a very pop culture phrase, but there's certain profundity in that statement. So, you know, the children are our future.
Indeed. Let me ask a quick question. How did you guys meet, you and Kimo?
Bob and I?
Well,
yeah,
we used to have the same teacher. We met through Guru Mark Stewart when he brought his Jeet Kune Do to Chinatown in like 91, 92. Even though I've been training with Mark for a couple of years earlier.
Interesting. Very cool.
Yeah. With that said, you and I stood on the same line for the same audition for a casting call for the same movie. About 25 years ago, I was the first one there for Karate Kid 3.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yes, I was the first one at that red door where they used to film Growing Pains.
Oh, my God.
Right on Olive Avenue.
I had no idea.
Just before it. Yes, absolutely. Met some interesting cats that day, too. It was a great day.
There was about 500 people in line.
Oh, it was amazing.
Well, you know, it's funny because I was like, I think sleeping in late that day, and my buddy Rich Cancino calls me up and goes, "Hey, man, did you see the notice?" I'm like, "No." He says, "Yeah, the casting for Karate Kid 3, man." And I'm like, "Oh, well, maybe we should go." So, you know, we get there, and there's like 500 people in the line, and I'm like, "Oh, this is like, wow," you know, so... You know, I just stood in line and, when Mr. Abelson, the director, came out, you know, and he just shot down the line, he just happened to stop at me and ask me a few questions. I gave him a headshot, and I thought that was the end of that. And, you know, real close to the time they began shooting, they called me and they needed a stunt kind of guy. And it was very, very good. It's lucky, you know. I still get a check every now and then from that film, so it pays a bill now and then. So it's truly a blessing.
Now, what did you do in the movie? Tell us a little bit about your part so maybe we can watch or our listeners can watch for you next time we actually see the movie.
Well, I was thinner and younger then, and my legal name as I was born was Christopher Paul Ford, and that's the name that you see that I'm credited with. I changed my name to William Christopher Ford in 2005 or so, around the time of my father's passing. His name was William, and I always wanted to have that name, so I just got rid of the Paul and shifted my name. But what I do in the movie is I'm one of the bad guys. You know, I basically was Sean Kanan's character in that movie was Mike Barnes, and he was like the bad boy of karate, and so I was supposed to be one of his trainers and, you know, one of the bad guys that go into the bonsai shop, and I smash the shoji screens, and then Ralph Macchio and I have this face off, and I throw a punch at him and he knees me and he throws me into the shelving, and that's my big moment in the film.
Yeah, that's awesome. I have the whole series. I'm going to watch
it. That is so cool.
Well, you know, I have to say, Ralph Macchio was great. He was a really nice guy. And, you know, he was the guy who actually said to, we're rehearsing the scene. And then he turns to John Avildsen, the director, and he says, hey, can you give him a line or something here, because I need some motivation, you know, because he's just kind of standing there. And so that's when John Avildsen says, okay, why don't you say, okay, you take off and then push him. And I'm like, oh, okay. So that's how that came about. And
nice. Did you get a union card?
Well, you know, I was hired as a sort of a stunt actor, and I was Taft Hartley, but, you know, it was just nice to have that line added. And, you know, they were kind enough also to give me a billing at the front of the movie, which I did not expect. So it was just a great experience. I mean, I can't say enough good things about Mr. Macchio and Mr. Avildsen. And, you know, and Sean Kanan and I have kept in touch over the years, and he's been extremely kind to me, very generous in a lot of ways. So I definitely owe a lot to that movie and the people behind that movie.
Now, who choreographed
that scene? Pat Johnson, mainly. You know, it's interesting because Mr. Miyagi was actually based on Chojun Miyagi of Goju-Ryu, the founder of Goju-Ryu Karate. And the writer, Robert Mark Kanan, was a Goju-Ryu black belt. And so he was actually on set, and he and Pat Johnson were sort of putting the fights together, mainly the main matches at the end, sort of together. But it was mainly Mr. Johnson who was the choreographer, but Mr. Kamen was also kind of contributing to that. So it was an interesting process. And then, you know, Master Fumio Demura was on set also, and as you know, he's the stunt double for Pat Morita. So it was pretty exciting, you know, being around all these high level guys.
Epic experience for sure.
Yeah, and I was really, really green, and, you know, everything was like, ooh, golly, 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 you know, and I was just glad that I couldn't believe that I actually had gotten my union card, and, you know, it was like, wow, you know. So, you know, I just, what a great experience.
Okay. Man, I couldn't imagine being in that time, at that place, at that age, that you were blessed. So congratulations on that. You deserved it.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And I'm continuing to work in the industry. You know, it's a lot of feast and famine, and, you know, and as Kimo can tell you, a lot more famine than feast sometimes, you know. But
especially now.
We enjoy it, you know, and, you know, we got a chance to work together on that film with William Leong over there at Loyola. And even though we didn't have any scenes together, that was still fun. And that was actually the first time that I had met Kimo.
Exactly. And I have to say that you've left a great impression. You're very professional. And it was a joy to work with you. You know, sometimes, Bob, when you're coordinating a project, a film, and guys are so hungry, and they may have talent, but they don't let you do your job. They're always going, I can do this, I can do this, well, we can do this, well, how about if we do this? William here is just so professional, calming. You know, you want people like that on the set, especially if you're going to be on set 15 hours a day. So that's a good role model for anybody out there listening to that. When you're on a set, make yourself comfortable on the set so that people would prefer having you there. Hey, speaking of work, William, I hear that you're in a live pirate show in Buena Park.
Yeah, I actually do the Pirates Dinner Adventure. I'm there part time. I'm one of the subs, and basically, I work when I want to work. My school and my family are really taking up a lot of my time right now. But when I first hired on, there was a gentleman by the name of Seafood Dave Morizzo, who I believe Bob interviewed on a previous show. And
that's correct.
He's a great guy. Has done a lot of work. He was the fight choreographer for Pirates when I first hired on, and he really helped me a lot. You know, helped me understand stage fighting for a live production versus film, and the fight lines are a little different in that arena because it's almost like theater in the round. So we have to play to most, the sides, and a lot of times the hits that you see from certain sections are obvious misses, but we're hoping that, it sells for most of the people in the audience. But that's a really fun show, a lot of great performers, some amazing talent there, and really a lot of fun. That's kind of my fun gig that I get to do once in a while. And the kids really enjoy that. It's kind of cool because my students get bragging rights because it's not every student that gets to say that their sensei is a pirate also. So it's kind of cool.
That's very cool.
Have your children seen the show?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Have your children seen the show?
Well, my oldest daughter is 15, and she and my son, who is 19, they've seen the show. And, of course, my little one, who is 2, my oldest kids, they're actually from previous relationship. And my youngest daughter, who my wife and I share together, is she's just turned terrible, too. And she likes a show called Jake and the Neverland Pirates. And, I'm sure that when she's a little bit older, maybe when she's 3, we'll bring her out to see the show. But it's probably a little too intense for her right now. But she's kind of a character. Yeah, she's.
If your 15-year-old's anything like mine at this point in time, you're a pure embarrassment.
Well, how teenagers are. They're But I do understand.
How did you get that part?
How did I get the part in the pirate show?
Yes.
I was reading Backstage West, I think, and then I saw an audition notice. So, I decided to just drive down there, and I was a little hesitant. I was kind of like, my experience before, and I'm not saying all guys like this, but, sometimes, within the stunt industry, there's, different subgenres, and then you have your swordsmen, and some of the swordsmen that I experienced before were kind of like, these guys are kind of intense, and there was a lot of ego. And, maybe that's all across the board, Kimo, I'm not sure. But I was like thinking that this place was run by a bunch of guys who just, were just a bunch of swordsmen, And I was like, but I went there and actually that wasn't the case. It was actually like, it's an actual company and, this is actual theater people who are involved, and the owners actually come from a circus background. So it was kind of cool. So, they just had us read some copy and, in the show, it's stunt heavy, so we're swinging on ropes and things like that, and I've never actually swung on a high rope before, but they just said, hey, if you haven't done anything, just tell us, because sometimes people will embellish their own resumes and embellish their own abilities just to get a job, and then they scramble to go learn the skill later on. But I was like, look, I'm a martial artist. I can do stunt fights. I've never jumped on a trampoline before. I've never swung on a rope before. But they were like, oh, we appreciate your honesty. And they took a look at my they liked my read. They liked my hand-to-hand. And the director at the time was named Christian Stokes, who has since moved on. But
Christian. Yeah.
Oh, you know Christian?
Yes.
But he's basically the guy that hired me, you know. And
right.
Said, you know, and he, you know, he's the guy who actually gave me the nickname of WC, William Christopher. He didn't want to pronounce, or he just started calling me WC, and it kind of stuck. So anybody who calls me WC, I know is from Pirates, you know.
I read in one of your posts that you're left-handed. Now, being a swordsman. And having choreography that was already laid out before you got there, how was adjusting to everything as a left-handed performer?
Well, you know what? I actually broke my left arm when I was in the third grade on a field trip. And I was still going to karate classes with my cast on. And believe it or not, my right hand actually compensated. So I started doing everything sports-wise as a right-hander. So for all intent and purposes, you know, I function as a right-hander except when I have to eat and when I have to write. I like to fight as a right-hander. I'm a terrible basketball player, but when I do play, I shoot as a right-hander would. I throw a baseball with my right hand. So I found that it actually has worked to my advantage since most people are right-handed.
So you are fairly ambidextrous.
Somewhat. I don't like to say that, but but I think I function more like a right-hander when it comes to, like, you know, stunts and martial arts. I immediately revert back to I can't write with my right hand. You know, I have to write with my left hand, and it's a terrible scrawl. I mean, it's just awful. So I'll write stuff on the whiteboard at school, and the students are like, "What does that say?" They're like, I'm left-handed. Give me a break, you know.
Well, Bob? Bob? Well,
have we lost
William?
Bob?
I don't know. You know what? I'm going to share this with the audience. This is what William posted on Facebook today, if you don't mind, William.
I
think it's very nice. And this tells you what kind of person he is. He wrote down that his reminders for himself today is perception, perspective, context, and common sense. But the part that I like below it is an add. He added on in his comments that, let me add love and compassion to my list. I think that's beautiful, and it says a lot about your character, your focus, and, you know, love and compassion on this planet. Let's face it, there could never be enough. So you posting something like that says a lot about yourself, and I just wanted to share that with the audience because if they wanted to train with you, they know what kind of person they're going to be training with. So, speaking of that.
Well, I do appreciate that.
Sorry about that, guys. I had some really bad technical difficulty on my side.
Okay.
Bob, is that?
Is it okay?
It's fine. Now, listen, William, we have a caller that wants to go live with you. Can you take a call?
Yes, that would be great.
Hi,
you are live, caller from the 818. Who's this?
This is Sue Jacarl. Everyone calls me Purple.
Purple!
I can't imagine why they call you Purple, Susan.
Yeah, I don't know either, because I'm so Swedish. No, actually, I think the callers don't know, but I'm very ethnically Asian looking, so. But my very first question.
Really?
Yes, I am. You can't tell by my voice, you know, because it's so awesome. No. It was cool that you asked about the ambidextrous thing, because I have the same thing going on with myself. So it's interesting to know. Like, I did want to know if there are left-handed martial artists, if they have difficulty doing stunts or whatever, but. So I guess we'll never know until the next left-handed person gets interviewed. but about the pirates,
yes.
I want to know, so if someone comes up to you, WC, and says ninjas or pirates, what are you going to choose?
Oh, that's a hard one. I kind of like to see a mashup, you know. That would be kind of a cool show, you know, a ninja versus pirates theme.
Yeah, I know, but you have to pick one.
I have to pick one?
You can't weasel out of this.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to go with pirates for the sake of my job security.
Nice. That's true family man talking. And then my one other question is, like, actually semi-serious, but given your multi-ethnic background, do you think that helps
yes.
you as a martial artist absorb things, styles, concepts, philosophies?
Well, you know, I certainly have been exposed to, you know, a lot of different cultures. And, you know, in my own, you know, my mother is actually from Japan, but she's Japanese, Hawaiian in ethnicity,
mm-hmm.
but born and raised in Japan. My dad was from Oregon, and he was of English, German, and Native American background, you know. So, I mean, certainly it's, you know, growing up, I was always, you know, thought to be open-minded. In terms of, you know, acting in stunts, I think it used to be kind of difficult because when I would go into auditions, it would be like, well, you really don't look Asian enough, or you really don't look white enough, or, you know, it's only in the last few years that it's become, you know, ethnically ambiguous, and, you know, it's,
right.
I think more opportunities have come up. In terms of learning martial arts, yeah, probably,
yeah.
probably definitely helped me to be, you know, more broad-minded, you know, sort of like, oh, you know, well, this is from, you know, let's take a look at the Hawaiian arts. Let's take a look at the Japanese arts and, you know,
right.
Whatever else might be out there. You know, it's a very individual thing. And no one art is the art, I think. You know, it's all the best martial artists have definitely cross-trained or at least, you know, taken a look at other arts.
And have you ever considered taking Krav Maga classes?
Yeah, actually,
just
I
wondering.
Have. Are you studying that?
I've taken a couple classes, but my schedule is kind of spastic, so, but, you know, if you take a class, I might show up.
Well, it was really cool meeting you at the award ceremony. You know, you did a great job.
Oh, yeah, I know. I didn't follow my face, so that's an A+. So it was a good day for me. I have to thank Tak Kubota for my awesome training. No, he's going to kill me that I said that, but... yeah, thank you, and I got to go back to this shindig I'm at right now, but thank you for all your awesomeness, your posts, and Bob, you're pretty awesome too, even though I'm never going to admit that publicly ever again.
Wow. Wow. Stab it in my heart, twist, and apply salt.
Love
thank you,
Bob. Okay, I got to go. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for calling.
You know, I'm glad you said that, William, about your ethnicity. Looking at you, though, with the long hair and all, have you ever been cast as an American Indian?
Yeah, I get that a lot. You know, and, you know, I mean, I'm a Heinz 57, you know, chop suey child, you know. So, yeah, certainly we have some of that, you know, but I'm not, you know, certainly by any stretch of the imagination, you know, pure Native American, you know, but I remember I was going to Arizona one time with the family, and we'd stopped over at a rest place, you know, and, you know, the family went into the restroom, and I was just standing out there waiting, and there are, you know, people who are selling their wares there, you know, and necklaces and whatnot, and this one tourist lady came up to me and was like, hey, how much do you want for that necklace? And I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, ask the person who's selling it, man. I'm a tourist like you, you know. But they totally thought that I was actually selling these Native American beads, you know. And I was like, okay, you know, it works. I mean, I certainly would, you know, take the work, you know, if the work came up in a movie or something like that. But, you know, I'd certainly want to make sure that it was respectful to the culture. You know, I think that everybody should be allowed to play anything, but at the same time, we I think we should be sensitive. You know, when I see things that could be possibly derogatory, you know, or disrespectful, I'm not necessarily interested. I'm not interested in doing that.
Right, right. Well, it was funny, Kimo, you mentioned something about he was totally professional and said he was this, he's a nice guy. You know, it was funny. When I met him at the Masters Hall of Fame in June 22nd, I was beat. I'd been doing seminars all day, all this other stuff. He brings his wife and asks me if he could sit at my table. There's two seats left. And I said, absolutely. Because he didn't want to. Now, as ambassadors at the Masters Hall of Fame, we all get our own table. But people had been sitting in his seats, and he didn't want to ask anybody to leave. He was too nice. So he ended up at my table.
Well, I really do appreciate
cool,
that.
Thank
you.
That's the first time I met him.
Yeah,
that is very
really,
cool.
Really appreciate that, sir. And we were really grateful that you, you know, allowed us to sit at your table. And, you know, it was a good opportunity to get a chance to talk to you and meet you. So, you know, it was meant to be.
It was. It absolutely was. And for some reason, I lost my window on my computer. Oh, well. But I'm still connected, which is a good thing. Tell us a little bit more about your teaching, Will. Do you teach weapons? If you do, which ones do you teach? Do you teach kids? Do you teach people with special needs? Do you offer women's self-defense classes, et cetera?
Okay. Well, you know, the basic program is based on traditional karate. However, you know, with a progressive flavor to it. We like to incorporate also, you know, boxing as well as some grappling. We've recently started to incorporate, you know, some Filipino arnis, very practical stuff. Most of my clients are kids. However, we're starting to build a pretty good adult population as well. A lot of those adults happen to be women. So we don't necessarily teach a women's self-defense class per se, but we do have a lot of females in our school. We have some special needs kids. A couple of them, I believe, are high-functioning autistic. I have one child who has Down syndrome, and they're in the general population, though. They take the regular classes just like everybody else, and they do phenomenal. They're doing really, really well. And it just requires just a little bit more attention to detail, a little bit more sensitivity to what their needs might be. But they're doing phenomenal. Traditional karate, we do teach the traditional weapons as well. You know, mainly right now, the bow staff, that's a very easy weapon for the kids to learn, and it's a lot of fun for them because they get to hit the sticks together, you know. We've been injury, for the most part, injury-free. Sometimes a couple of knuckles get wrapped here and there. But that's pretty much it. And we're always open to, you know, new ideas, potentially new weapon, new methods. I like teaching traditional martial arts because there's a tradition, and also there's a lot of things that go along with it. You know, the respect, the courtesy, the whole thing about self-control, self-respect, respect for others, discipline. Those are very important aspects of the martial arts. And, you know, something else that we're also trying to incorporate is, how do you verbally de-escalate a situation? You know, how do we not get into a situation so we don't have to use our skills? That's an important aspect of the arts that I think sometimes is forgotten. You know, everybody's teaching, well, this is what you do in this situation, and then you kick this guy, and then you, you know, it's like, well, what if you're in a situation where somebody's just sort of verbally taunting you, you know, then, you know, you can't just go off and kick them in the head, you know? So how do you get out of that situation? You know, how do you de-escalate it? How do you avoid it? So that's what we're kind of focusing
on. What have you been doing for that, to address that situation?
One of the things is using a non-violent posture. And, you know, basically where you put your hands up and your hands are open. So rather than say, you know, somebody comes up to you and you immediately get into a fighting stance, you know, I think that kind of, like, heats the situation up, you know, where it's like, you
right.
know, come at me, bro, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, there's something
so
that,
being more unassuming. And,
yeah, you know, you put your hands up, you can still see the person, you know, but what this says is, and you actually say this, I don't want to fight. Hey, you know, have I done something to offend you? Look, I'm sorry, you know. One, your hands are up and you can still protect yourself. But the other thing is it might actually disarm your potential opponent. So, you know, we try to teach that in addition to, like, okay, let's assume the fight has already started, then, you know, you put your guard up. But oftentimes fights happen in an instant, and they're like, you know, there's always a pre-confrontation clue. You know, there's usually, unless it's an ambush, somebody's kind of getting in your face, or, you know, it might be, hey, you took my parking spot. So, you know, how do we defuse these types of situations? And, of course, sometimes, you know, fighting is inevitable. You know, we have to do it. But I hope that my students can always try to not fight. You know, try to find a way out. Try to, you know, where are your escapes before getting into a confrontation? And, you know, it's just a better way.
You know, so you're saying, I think it's brilliant, of course, just being aware of your surroundings and then knowing where the trend, the situation is going before it actually happens so that
sure.
you're calm and controlled. You know, that takes a lot of discipline, especially if you're a younger person with more hormones or testosterone, you know, manipulating. When you're a young boy, you know, kids want to fight. Little boys want to fight. When they're older, then if they're not hooking up with with some action, they get their action another way. You know, they start
sure.
wanting to fight. It's just the
sure.
nature of the beast.
Absolutely.
And it's great that you're approaching those scenarios, conditioning, especially since you said your school has so many young people
uh-huh.
that you're planting a seed in their head that they're prepared mentally. That if they do get in a situation, that they are prepared to handle it physically if they have to, but it's a lot more challenge and not to.
Sure.
You know, I think that's a really great approach to do. And I love the whole unassuming posture thing. You know, it can defuse a situation, but if it doesn't, then, you know, you'll have an edge, an element of surprise, because you're actually ready when... You know, on the front, you don't look it. So that's
well. I think that one of the things is, you know, by putting your hands up with your hands open, your fingers spread, you know, you can still move if you have to. You know, you can still defend yourself if you have to. But it also is as a gentleman named Tony Blauer, who does a lot of reality based stuff, fantastic stuff. You know, he's always saying, "Hey, look, you know, I don't want to fight. It's a non-violent, non-confrontational posture," and I do think it's brilliant. The other thing is that not only do you have your opponent, but you have the legal system. You know, so we as adults, you know, we're trained martial artists, and you know, I don't want to find myself in a situation where it was like, "Well, Mr. Ford, was it really necessary to break this man's arm and to punch him in the face?" While people around you have basically filmed you on their iPhones, you know, and now it's all over the world on YouTube. So to keep yourself safe and out of jail, I think it's also important to establish that, hey, look, I do not want to fight. And you say that, and, you know, by putting your hands up, you know, it's recorded and the witnesses will say, well, you know what, there it is. He said he didn't want to fight, put his hands up. He started backing away. You know, the guy ran into his hand, you know. So I think there's some wisdom in that in this day and age.
You heard it, folks. Self-defense isn't just martial arts. It's defending yourself in law so that you can have the law on your side. That is very
That's
smart.
Right. If you say the wrong thing, you're going to jail. You have
yes.
to learn how to say what the cop wants to hear and what needs to hear. You have to be able to articulate what you saw, how you felt, based on how you felt, what you did.
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely right. And there are cameras everywhere. And I figured out if I'm ever in a fight, I am so screwed. My name is everywhere. You Google my name and it's recipient of the Hall of Fame, recipient of the Honor Awards. Nothing I've put up, but it's just this paper trail of just
yeah.
hammering the nail in my coffin.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
You say, I don't want to fight. You assume a posture that's going to work in your favor if it's caught on camera. And
mm-hmm.
diffuse it. And if you can't, you at least have the evidence that you are not at fault or you're not antagonizing, that you're actually
you know, trying to diffuse.
I was in fear for my life, and I did not want to fight. And then just use, you know, end the fight, and then figure out a way to leave. You know, that's important, you know. I do agree with you, a lot of these young guys, you know, it's all about, you know, who's the toughest, you know, and come at me, bro. And it's like, well, you know, that's a young person's perspective, you know. When I do grapple with some of my friends who are actually way better than me, you know, when I was a younger man, I would, like, really, really, like, let my ego get it. And it's like, oh, you're not going to tap me. You're not going to tap me. And now it's like, well, the difference between a young man and an old man is an old man knows when to tap. And I certainly have done my share of tapping recently. And, you know, it's all about safe training, having fun. And, hey, just like, hey, you know, it's knowing when to tap, you know.
That's right. We used to let the pain go a little bit when we were younger. Now, as soon as the pain hits, we start clapping.
Yep, I'm good. Hey, you're better. You know, I'm good. Let me go.
Hey, William?
Yes.
I'm going to backtrack a little bit. Earlier in this interview, you mentioned when you were younger, you wanted to stop training, but your mom, mm-hmm. You know, made you not. What was your reason for wanting to stop training?
You know, it's like most kids experience, you know, they get bored. We also had, you know, my instructor, Sensei Robago, sometimes brought in other instructors, you know, friends of his or other people who were, you know, under Yamashita Sensei. And there was an individual who I'm friends with today, but his name was Sensei Dennis O'Brien, and he was an FBI guy. And this guy was just, man, he was scary and like a drill sergeant, and he didn't care if you were a kid or not, you know. He got in your face and he yelled at you, and I was like, you know what, I don't want to go back, I quit, you know. And so, you know, my mom was saying, look, you know, we've invested this much time, you know, just go until you get your black belt and then you can quit, you know. And I was like, okay, you know. But I mean, I tried every trick in the book, you know. I tried, you know, I remember one time I pretended that I had a bloody nose, and I took a little red marker and put it on a piece of cotton and chucked it up my nose. And, of course, what I didn't expect, that it would turn pink and my mom would smell the ink, you know. But I mean, I tried everything, you know. And but, you know, she's like, no, you're going, you know. And I'm really glad that she made me go, because, you know, I really started to get good. I was one of those kids that was not good when I started. I was very clumsy, not good at any sports. And at some point, I just stayed with it long enough to where it, eventually something clicked. And something made me realize that, oh, I'm actually kind of good at this. But again, you know, one of the factors that really made me turn the corner was there was a they were premiering a movie called The Game of Death down in Hollywood. And this was like, you know, I hadn't experienced personally before this, you know. So, you know, this was a big deal. And Guro Daniel Santo was there and Brandon Lee was there. You know, he was like a kid at the time, you know. I mean, he must have been about 13 or 14 years old. And, you know, I mean, so our school was invited down to go to this thing. And I'm like, hey, a karate movie, that sounds really cool. And so we went down there, and you know, I didn't understand, you know, and the lights went off and people started taking pictures of the screen. And then in the last part of the movie where the actual Bruce Lee shows up, you know, and it's not a stunt double, the audience just went crazy. And, you know, I mean, flash photography everywhere, taking pictures of the screen. And it wasn't until later that I found out the history of this movie. And I look back at it now and it's like, wow, what an awful movie that was. But man, with Bruce, it was phenomenal. And then,
how old were you?
Oh, I was about 12 years old at the time. This was in 1978.
Okay.
And after that, they re-released Enter the Dragon, and that's when it was a done deal, where I'm like, okay, you know, this is the man for me. You know, I mean, I was just like, you know, so that's when I was, I got my mom to order me a pair of Game of Death ball bearing nunchaku from the Asian World of Martial Arts in Philadelphia. And I just waited and waited and waited, and they actually would ship it to your house back then. So it came in the mail, and I busted them out and immediately cracked myself in the head and just but I knew I was sold from then on. And then I just started practicing more. You know, it started to become a fun thing for me. And, you know, the more you do something, the better you get it, the better you get it. The more you do it, the better you get it. You know, it becomes that cycle. And eventually it just became something that I really became passionate about. And now I guess I'm a martial arts geek nerd because, you know, I love kung fu movies, samurai movies, just love talking to martial artists, love talking martial arts, reading about it. You know, it's like, you know, an obsession.
I think we all can relate to that.
Oh, yeah. Now, William, how does your lovely wife feel about that? Mine, it drives her nuts when I'm around my martial arts friends.
Well, you know, she's will retire early sometimes, and she'll hear me, you know, in the living room, and she'll hear my clothes snapping, and she's like, "Are you doing karate?" And I'm like, "No." And she says, "You're lying." She kind of acts like sometimes she rolls her eyes sometimes, but you know, secretly she really digs it. And I'm very lucky in that she also likes kung fu movies very much, so she'll sit there and watch them with me. Love samurai movies. I have not been able to convert her over to professional wrestling yet, but I'm working on that. But
nice.
She thinks professional wrestling she called it dumb, and I was highly offended by that. But she got the other two things, so you know, 2 out of 3 is not bad.
Have any of her children followed in her footsteps?
You know what? Not yet, but my youngest daughter, Bodie, who's 2, she picks up a stick and she really looks like she knows what she's doing. We went into a martial arts supply store the other day, and she insisted that I buy her a belt. And she didn't want the white belt, she wanted the blue belt. You know, and I think it's just because she thinks it's pretty. But she put her belt on, and so, you know, and she has kicked me in the face on occasion. You know, she'll say, I'm trying to strap her into her car seat, and she's very willful, and she kicked me in the face, left a slipper mark on my forehead. Basically said Hakuna Matata after that. And so if we can tame her a little bit, you know, then I think she'll be a very good martial artist. Right now she's a little bit, a little Neanderthal, you know.
Well, in about a year she'll be right even with your groin.
Well, yeah, and, you know, she did do the Hulk smash groin stomp on me once when I was lying down. You know, it was quite an eye opener, to say the least.
I only laugh because I've been there.
You know? Yeah, I think I posted it on my Facebook status once.
You mentioned earlier that you have more women in your dojo. Do you see a trend in that happening lately, that there are more women becoming involved in the martial arts? I mean, of course, you know, Ronda Rousey and, you know, the whole MMA world brought that to fruition, or actually made it very popular. Mm-hmm. And do you think that's you said there's more in your school now.
Yeah, we have a lot of girls. And not just girls, we have women, you know. I think that, generally speaking, the girls tend to be better technically, you know, and they tend to listen better. They follow directions better. The boys tend to be stronger, you know, but the attention span is not as great. And as far as the older women, when I mean older, I mean, you know, adult women in their 20s and 30s, I think it's I'm not sure why, but they have been coming, and they have been doing very well. And I'm not sure why.
See, I have to agree with you. I remember decades ago, there wouldn't be that many women in any kun, dojo, classroom. And I'm just seeing more and more, and they're passionate about it. They get it. And I think that's, I think it's beautiful. I love having women in class personally. So I was just wondering what happened, what made that happen?
You know, and I'm not sure. You know, I mean, I do have a very friendly approach to martial arts in the way that I teach. You know, I mean, that appeals to kids for sure. But, you know, I mean, I'm kind of a nurturer, you know, and I do have a different kind of approach to my teaching. So I'm not sure if that has anything to do with anything, but, you know, it is what it is, you know. And I'm very happy that we have a very large female population, you know. I mean, it's great. And it's actually a great selling point for when other young girls want to, you know, take karate, but they're kind of like, well, you know, she's kind of hesitant because she doesn't want to be in a class with all boys. And then they say, it's like, oh, there's like a bunch of girls here too. It's it kind of helps sell the class.
I agree. And speaking of that, do you think there's a backlash? MMA became extremely popular. There's MMA gyms and UFC gyms all over the place now. That do you think there's a backlash where people are like, okay, now I want to go traditional? Because for a second there, everybody was pulling away from traditional and going into the sport aspect of MMA. So what's your opinion on that?
Well, I think people are always going to return to basics at some point in time. You know, I mean, you know, I think that MMA has definitely been a very, very powerful influence, and it's here to stay, you know, and I think that it's got a very potentially positive influence. There's a lot of, like, great people in that industry. But I think at some point, you know, what I would like to see is, you know, like, to show people, like, how hard do they work, and, you know, what are some of the other benefits of MMA besides just the fighting part of it, you know? And, I mean, I do get that, you know, that I can see why that appeals to a lot of people. But I do think that there's always going to be a need to return to basics. I mean, you see that in filmmaking also where, you know, there's a lot of, you know, heavy special effects and, you know, great action sequences. But when the story is lacking, when the characters are not fully developed, when the writing is not as good, there's always something that you kind of go, there was just something that was missing. So if MMA can also incorporate, I think, that aspect of it, and I don't know if they will because I don't know if there is an interest in it in that particular arena, but if they can incorporate some of that, I think that it might have a broader appeal to people who are looking for something beyond just the fighting aspect of it. And if you go to, like, Brazilian jiu-jitsu schools, that teach the art of Brazilian jiu-jitsu, you actually see more of that in pure BJJ, in my opinion, you know, where
I agree.
You know, there is a tradition there. There is a respect there.
Honor, everything.
Mm-hmm.
I have to agree with you. I do like, you know, when you have people like Lyoto Machida or Anderson Silva or John Joe, you know, people that bring martial arts to the arena of that. And, you know, I thought Lyoto Machida was a very fabulous champion that, you know, brought that traditional art to the sports world. So, I don't know.
Yeah,
he's
a karate man. I mean, he was originally, I believe, studied, I'm not sure, I think he was a Shotokan man or a Kyokushin guy, as was George St-Pierre, you know, so they bring an interesting tradition in, I think, with them, you know, that they've been able to enhance with their grappling training. So, you know, hopefully we'll see some more of that.
Me too. I would just love to see somebody throw a form in there before they kick some butt.
Now, Kimo, wasn't it you that brought in, I remember this specifically in Chinatown, and I believe it was you that brought in the waiver for the UFC that made them responsible for anything you went through.
Yeah, no, that wasn't me. I'm sorry. But,
it must have been another little Asian dude. I swore it was you, but okay. But, yeah, I thought this waiver was just after the UFC had started, and they really done it right. They weren't responsible. They were responsible for nothing, including death.
Wow.
Your responsibility. Now, I was in a magazine the same month my oldest son was born. That would be February of 1995. I was on the cover of the Ultimate Fighter magazine with Greg Wooldridge, and it had come out. It was the second edition. Hoyce Gracie was on the first cover, and right after that issue came out, my buddy Greg got a letter, personal, from Hoyce Gracie to fight in the UFC.
Wow.
But he had just entered the police department, and he was on probation for the next year. He couldn't do it. And he would have done it. Kimo, I think you've met Greg before.
Sounds really familiar. You know what? That letter does sound familiar. I think I did have my hand on that at one time. Again, this is 20 years ago. So 16 years ago.
Well, you know what? I had an interesting, I was going to El Camino College, in Torrance, around, the late 80s or so, in the mid-80s, and I was taking a self-defense class there that was taught by an Aikido man named Mitsu Yamashita, who what a great martial artist and a great guy, very humble. And he said, hey, we're going to have a special martial arts exhibition here in class, and it's a family from Brazil called the Gracies. And at that time, nobody had heard of them, and so they came down and they basically said, anybody who wants to, try to beat us up, go ahead. And, we won't hit you back, but we're going to apply our techniques. And so, it was interesting because they demonstrated this. And prior to me seeing that, I was always like, well, I'll just sidekick a judo guy if he comes in, or, no wrestler's going to be able to get in because I'll just punch him. And I was like kind of shocked, and it opened my eyes because I was like, wow, these guys closed the gap so quick, and they were just right on top of these guys. And so I actually was able to get Hori and Gracie's number from Sensei Yamashita, and I called him up and I said I was interested in studying, and he says, oh, by all means, my friend. I'm Brazilian, they always say my friend, So I went to his house. And at the time, it was on a street called Cala Mayor in Torrance. And I got my free lesson, and I trained for a couple of months. And at the time, it was in their garage, and it was like $20 for half an hour. And a few times, actually, many of the times, I actually was actually taught by Hoyce, because Hordion was, busy doing another project, or he wasn't around. And this was Hoyce Gracie when he was 21 years old, still had a full head of hair, didn't speak very much English, and there was no UFC. But some good times, and I learned a lot of really interesting things that I had never learned before, and totally changed my perspective on fighting. But he was a cool cat, and his English wasn't as good as it is now, but he would always be like, hey, how are you doing, my friend? And I'd be like, hey, man, what are you going to do after class today? He's like, we're going to the beach, and, maybe we're going to do some jiu-jitsu later. And then months later, like maybe, right before UFC, I ran into him, and he's like, hey, I'm going to be in a free-for-all tournament. And he was talking about the UFC. So I was like, oh, that's great, and then UFC happened, and then it became what it is today, it's interesting being able to recall back then before there was a UFC.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Wow.
It's funny. I was with my buddy Greg, and it was, I forget the guy, Zane Frazier was in the very, very first UFC and had a school over in North Hollywood. And Urban Eyes at the time, and the guy was phenomenal. We just went over, we didn't, no egos, no nothing, we just went over to congratulate him because we thought anybody who steps in that arena has my respect.
Sure.
And the guy has asthma, he's, he's 5,500 feet in the air, he's Mile High City, and he can't breathe, and his legs are rubber. And I just remember everybody was getting trounced by the Gracies back then. And nowadays, everybody's training how to beat them. Everybody was getting their butt kicked back then.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah. Well, definitely they I think they changed the landscape, you know, and it was the way that martial artists, you know, now train. Most of the good ones that I know are they cross train and they do some form of grappling, you know, at the very least to be able to get up from the ground if you get taken down. You know, I wouldn't necessarily want to go to the ground in the street, you know, because I'm afraid somebody like his buddy is going to kick me in the head. But I would certainly want to know how to get up from the ground if I'm taken down, you know. And I think there's a lot of fantastic technique, a lot of it's a great art, you know, and a great sport. And, you know, I think at the very least, everybody should learn a little grappling at some point.
No, I totally agree with you, Will, because what if you do happen to end up on the ground? You don't want to be on the ground, but what if you happen to end up there? You have to know how to get up. You have to know how to defend yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You end up taking an eye on the way up. Oh, well. Take the guy's throat out. Sorry, my life was in danger. And typically today, you don't fight one-on-one. They've got five friends.
Yeah, for sure.
You definitely don't want to be on the ground then. Do you get a lot of customers coming in or clients that ask about MMA because it just is so popular right now?
Occasionally, but, you know, I've got plenty of, jiu-jitsu resources. You know, I've got friends who are, you know, own schools, and I can always refer them out, you know. I mean, the actual Gracie Torrance Academy is just right down the street from me, you know. So there's Brazilian Top Team in Signal Hill, and my very good friend Lee McDermott is a coach there, you know. Jocelyn Chang and Glenn Chang run Let's Roll Jiu-Jitsu in Torrance. You know, so we have a lot of resources, and I don't mind referring people out because, you know, traditional karate is not what a lot of people are looking for, and, you know, particularly like young guys, young adults, you know. So I train in the arts myself, you know, even though I haven't rolled in a long time, I still have a lot of respect for it as an art and as a sport, and we like to, you know, be able to, we try to steal from the best, you know, and incorporate, even if it's just a little bit, you know. How do you escape from a mount? Well, that's an important thing to know, you know. And then I get my running shoes on and see if I can, you know, do my Jesse Owens impersonation.
Right. You know, well, we do have another caller that we have to stop talking crap about now. You're going to get to meet my I don't know if you met her at the Hall of Fame or not. You know, she was at a table near me. You're going to get a chance to meet the Chief Post on the show that's breaking away from her tournament or from her seminar at the present time. So let me go live with Chief Post. Rusty, are you with us?
You guys got to stop talking crap about me.
Yeah, but you know, they keep coming out. People are calling in right now going, Tai Chi's a breeze. Everybody's breaking up. It's so easy.
My legs are so shot. And Grandmaster and Shifu just, like, waved me out and said, hey, we're going to lunch with Lester. And I'm like, oh, gosh, okay. So I can't really stay for all that long, but I wanted to call in and say hi to everyone and say hi to William. Hi, William.
Hi. Nice to hear from you.
Hi, how are you? Nice to hear from you, too. And I also wanted to thank Kimo for taking over for me while I was gone. Thanks, Kimo.
You're very welcome. It's been a pleasure.
Right on.
Talk to you.
See, well, let me ask you something. Is that contest still going on, you know, where people can vote?
Yes, it is. Yes,
okay.
It is. It's got another, like, 34 days.
Okay.
It's a long, long time. So I have no idea where they went. We're trying to figure out what happened to. Yeah, they left. I don't know. But anyway, I just wanted to call in and say hi. And Sifu Bob, I'll call you when I'm done and find out how the rest of the show went and stuff like that. But I'm pretty sure it went okay. So.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. All right, you guys, well, I will talk to you later. I just wanted to call in and say hello, and I hope to see you guys again soon.
All
And I'll talk to you later.
Enjoy your day out there.
Okay, great. Thanks. Talk to you guys later.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Talk to you.
Very nice.
She did say that she would be calling in as soon as she got lunch. So that she did.
She's awesome.
Yep. So, William, are there any plans for you in the future? Any goals you plan on tackling there?
Well, obviously we want to grow the school. And, you know, it's not in terms of, necessarily large numbers, but in terms of, the types of programs that we offer, the amount of classes, and continue to work with the students and get them to improve. I would like to see some of my – I've got a couple of teenagers who are, 13 right now, and I'd like to see them get their black belts before they get to – before they go off to college, which is, very doable. They're they've been at it for 2 years. So, I typically say, black belt is about 5 to 10 years, depending on how much time and dedication, that you could put into it. But I also know that, once you get to college, it's really tough. It would be really nice if they could actually get their black belts by the time they're, 17 or so, right before they go to college. Cause they can always come back to it. And, having a black belt is a nice thing that they can also put on the resume, So that's my goal there. I'm looking to produce and shoot some instructionals, DVDs, mainly for my own student body, but I'd like to get all my forms and katas on tape, because oftentimes parents ask me, do you have them online somewhere? And I say no, but feel free to shoot me with your iPhone. So, there's a ton of footage out there of me doing basic katas on people's iPhones. Probably more footage than in my entire film career, But I'd like to do it professionally, and then even more so than that, I'd like to actually show the actual applications of the techniques. I want to try something a little different, Bob. Is that I want to take the forms, show them, and then actually show the fight scene shot in a movie scenario, like a fight scene, rather than just saying, okay, well, here's the technique, here's what the technique really is, and demonstrate that. I'd like to be able to say, okay, now we shot a fight scene, and these are all the techniques that are in the kata, used in a realistic, practical sense, and shot in a cinematic way. So, I'm talking to some people right now, and, of course, we've got to raise a few funds for that, but I think that would be kind of a different approach to your typical instructional DVD. And, of course, I'm going to be hopefully involving Kimo as well, because, he's a great stunt guy, a great martial artist, maybe he would be kind enough to be, one of the fighters in the project when we get it going.
He's in the South Bay, so that would be really convenient, really close. He's done some, he's done some stuff. And you're right about the instructional DVDs. I've done 26 of them. This is the technique. This is the application. That's it. And there aren't that many companies anymore that are doing instructional DVDs since Unique Publications closed down. They're just not out there anymore. And I wish you luck on that, because that's a tough project to do on your own.
Yeah, it's going to be challenging for sure, the technology is available, and I have friends who are just filmmaker friends who are sitting on their equipment right now going, let us know when you want to do something, But at the same time, you want to do it right, and, you want to, I think that, I've seen too many times where, you do favors for people, and, I would like to be able to at least pay people something, It's like, let's have some decent food, even if you can pay somebody a little bit of money, they appreciate that, So we want to do it right. Of course, I will be calling in some favors, but, we want to just make it as professional as possible.
I like the idea of having high production value for an instructional video where you have a realistic atmosphere and a good DP, director of photography, and everything's shot beautifully. It would make it nice to watch. It would be
yeah.
So that,
and maybe even have more of an appeal more than just outside your student base, you know, if you can make it entertaining as well. And I think it would be really fun to bring in, you know, like let's say you did it as an episodic, you know, you're bringing in a different coordinator every episode, you know, and having different guys who are well known in the you know, the stunt fight industry, you know. It's like, oh man, you know, Jiro Kimura was in this episode and, you know, Kimo Kiyoka was in the last episode, you know what I mean? So that's mainly what's on what's going on right now in my mind, and we want to bring it to fruition, hopefully very soon.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Hopefully that can happen. Having a good director would be great.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, so how do people get a hold of you if they'd like to train with you? What's your contact? Is there anything you can tell the audience to look up? Your website, Facebook, anything?
Yeah. You can go to kaizendojo.com, and that's spelled K like kangaroo or like karate, A-I-Z like zebra, E-N like Nancy, kaizendojo.com. We also have a Facebook page, so it's the Kaizen Dojo Facebook page. And I'm in Torrance on the corner of 182nd and Western, so you can find me there. But I absolutely welcome communication. You know, even if you just drop by to say hi, you know, that's great. You know, drop me a line on Facebook. It's under William Christopher Ford. You know, friend me. You know, most of the time I accept if you're not a scam artist from Kenya or
Nigeria.
Right.
That is so true. Now, William, are there any events coming up for you we can announce? Community events you're going to be involved in, anything like that?
You know, none right away, but I certainly will, you know, keep everybody posted on the Facebook page as far as that goes. You know, we're big in the community, and we try to create an outreach as much as we can. So, you know, one of the things that we definitely want to do is a fundraiser for some sort of charity event. We're kind of looking at St. Jude's or something like that. So we'll definitely be keeping people posted.
Oh, please do it.
Great.
When it comes to fruition, we'll put it on the Dynamic Dojo page so we make sure we announce it on the show. And keep everybody informed on what's happening with you.
Awesome.
Because we do that with your buddy Elaine Yamano all the time. She is like tournament queen. She always has inter-school things in her thing in Laughlin. We're always announcing her stuff.
You're talking about Sensei Elaine Yamano?
Yep.
Oh, she's great. She's a good friend of mine. And shout out to her right now. She's been very supportive. Just a nice, nice lady. True martial arts instructor, and you know, she's fantastic. She's always trying to help too.
Oh yeah, she's great. We see each other at the mat. I guess she goes to the Masters every year after the last couple of years. She goes to the Lima Lama tournament. I've judged there. We keep running into each other all over the place. No, she's a good person. Really gives. She's one of the ones that really gives back to the community at large.
She does. Huh. She absolutely does. She actually stopped by my dojo and worked out on Thursday night. Earlier this week. She, you know, is, you know, puts herself in the position of being a student also. So we got a chance to work some bow staff stuff, and it was a lot of fun. Yeah, she's great.
Oh, very cool. Because she lives down by you, doesn't she? Even though she teaches in like Corona.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy because she lives in Torrance, but she teaches in Chino. And I guess she originally lived in Chino, and she had a chance to move to Torrance, but she couldn't leave her kids. She just didn't want to leave her students. So she makes that trek 4 times a week up to her dojo in Chino. And it's like, okay, you know, you're okay in my book, you know. Major props, you know.
Right, absolutely. To make that kind of trip, because that's an hour drive in good traffic.
Yeah. And I've been to her school. She had me there as a guest once, and she's got some great kids and some great students there. Just really, really nice people.
Yeah, she's
great. That's
really
refreshing. It's refreshing hearing you and her having such dedication to your students.
students. It's that you want your students to have their black belts before they graduate, and her driving hours a day, 4 days a week. It's so much more than people that just go out there and you know, take it like you're taking a class at a fitness gym. You know, it's a give and take, and I have so much respect for that.
Well, thank you. I think that's what it's all about. You know, I mean, you know, my instructors gave to me, and so, you know, I certainly need to pay it forward, so to speak. And I hope that, you know, my students will do the same, you know, pass it on. You know, and it's all about the community. You know, we wouldn't be where we were if it wasn't for the parents and for the students. You know, we wouldn't have a dojo, you know. So, you know, it's all about them, you know, much thanks to them. And we've created a little community, you know, where, you know, we look out for each other, we help each other, you know, and it's come back many times to me, you know. The families are just wonderful, you know, and we're just blessed. So I want to continue serving, you know, my community, not just my own, you know, the people within my own dojo, but, you know, the community as a whole. And I'm a big believer also in that there's plenty to go around, you know, so... You know, sometimes instructors can be like, no, you know, I want all the students for myself, and, you know, they don't want to share information, you know, and I'm very, very like, hey, you know what, my friend owns a jiu-jitsu school, go see her, or, you know what, go see Elaine Yamano in Chino, you know, go see, you know, whoever, it doesn't matter, you know, as long as they're getting something, some benefit out of it, you know, there's plenty to go around, it's a big city, a lot of people, you know. So let's share the wealth, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, some of the greatest stick practitioners, Jeet Kune Do practitioners are down there. The MMA guys, you're down there. And what you teach is not for everybody, and what they teach is not for everybody. And you're absolutely right. Well, there's always enough to go around. I was on a conference call with, I'm not going to say with who, but everybody was so titled out. You know, everybody, oh, this is Grandmaster so-and-so, this is Grandmaster, this is Master, this... I was on there, I said, no, I'm Bob. And Greg was on there, he said, this is Greg. We didn't have a title. It didn't matter, we were equals at that point.
But
I see what you're saying about the students, so it's very important that the students realize, you're Sensei, you're not Will, you're not William, you're not Mister, you're Sensei, you're Shihan, you're whatever title you bestow upon yourself at that point, and what your other instructors have done.
Well, what, you know, what my students, some of them understand is that, you know what, it's not for me, it's for them. You know what I mean? Because they're learning how to show respect. They're learning how to, oh, okay, this is the person who is our leader at this point. You know, let's show them the respect. It's got to go both ways, of course. You know, I have to respect them as well. It can't just be about me. It's not about me. It's really about them. But, you know, sometimes that in that context, you know, when you're working with kids, you know, yes, I think there's something that's lost here. I don't know if it's just LA, but, you know, I kind of like the whole thing about, you know, Mr., Mrs., Sir, Ma'am, thank you, please, may I, you know, there's a certain manners, you know, are important. Courtesy is important. And if I can bring that back in some small way, then it can be paid forward as well, you know, because, you know, people know, you know, what a nice young man, who do you train with, you know, that's kind of a reflection back on me, but they can use that for the rest of their lives, and certainly, you know, the things that I've learned from my instructors, you know, I'm able to carry with me throughout my day, just being, just showing up, and you know, try very hard to be respectful to everyone, to, you know, be courteous. I try to address my elders as Mr. You know, I address them as uncle or auntie because that's the Hawaiian way, you know. But, you know, I like to address my older, you know, other instructors as sensei and sifu. But, you know, I'm a kind of casual guy myself. Interestingly enough, I have a friend and a teacher, his name is Sensei Bruce Gwen, and he runs Nihon Karate Dojo in Fullerton. Got a fantastic dojo, great, great school. And he always introduces himself as Bruce, you know. So it's interesting because he'll say, oh, Sensei Ford. And I'll say, hello, Sensei Gwen, how are you? And he'll say, oh, I'm Bruce. And I'll say, oh, I'm Will. Yeah. So I think that's the way it's supposed to be. You know, it's like, you know, we don't call ourselves Sensei. You know, I don't introduce myself as, hi, I'm, you know, this. But I do like to address other people by their title, especially like when I'm, like, sometimes I have guest people come in, you know. So whenever Sensei Elaine comes in, I always say, hey, say hello, Sensei Elaine, go and pay your respects. And that way the kids are kind of picking up on that.
Absolutely. And I think the era of what was typically a Cobra Kai dojo mentality, I think that's pretty well gone.
I hope so.
It's been years, but there was a time when that mentality was actually in existence.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It was absolutely insane. I really want to thank you, Will, for joining us today. Kimo, you did a great job. As always, you covered my butt on some technical difficulties. And if I hadn't mentioned it, nobody would have known there were any technical difficulties in the show. I really appreciate that, and I'm sure you'll be hearing from Rusty. Will, is there any parting last words that you'd like to tell our listeners?
I want to thank you both for giving me the opportunity to be on your show. I have to admit I was a little nervous before you called, but we got through it okay, you know. And thanks to all the listeners for tuning in. I appreciate everybody out there who's supported me and supported our page. And, you know, just, you know, to all martial artists, you know, we're all brothers and sisters. And let me know if there's anything that I can do to support you guys as well. I mean, I send that out to both Kimo and Bob, but also to anybody out there who's listening. Thanks, Purple, for calling in. Thanks, Sifu, to Jesus, for calling in. And if you guys, you know where to find me, let me know if there's any way I can help.
And what is that again? Kaizen.com? KaizenDojo.com?
KaizenDojo.com.
Yeah. Go for us, Will.
K like karate, A, I, Z like Zen, E, N like nurse, DOJO.com.
Perfect. Kimo, again, I want to thank you. You're a great co-host. Will, the best of luck to you. And our next week's guest is going to be Master Richard Norton. I really look forward to it. We're going to be connecting with him via Skype from Melbourne, Australia. Will, it's always a pleasure. I look forward to seeing you at the next Masters. We're going to have some conference calls coming up. Now, remember, you can tell your students they can listen to this as an archive show at any time, and they can download it as a podcast from iTunes. It's available immediately after the show. So all they have to do is
awesome.
Go to the iTunes store and search Dynamic Dojo, and we'll be there.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. I really enjoyed it. There's our ending music. You guys have a great day. I really enjoyed the show. We had a lot of fun, guys.
Thank you. Take care.
Take care, gentlemen. Take care of yourself.